Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with host Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist, author, and international expert in the area of grief and loss. Tune in and hear bereaved parents and siblings share their stories of loss, hope, and renewal. You will learn what they have done to cope, how they have established a new normal in their lives, and how they have gone on to do fantastic things. Dr. Gloria dedicates this show to her deceased son, Scott, and to all of the parents and other family members who have lost loved ones before their time. And now, with Healing the Grieving Heart, here's your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley.
Hello, I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart. We know that a number of you have lost your loved one through violent crime, and that you must continue to cope with the senseless acts that took your child or sibling's life. Some of you are still in the trial phase, and some of you are required to go to parole hearings. My guests and I know that your losses are difficult, and we are here to tell you that we have made it, and so can you. Life may seem insurmountable at times, but you will laugh, have pleasure, and enjoy life again. Remember that just going about your day-to-day business is an accomplishment, whether it's working in the home or the office. Please join us on our show by calling our toll-free number, 1-866-369-3742, with questions or comments regarding the losses in your life. You can also email me at G as in Gloria, C as in Cat, Horsley, H-O-R-S-L-E-Y, at AOL.com. And remember, these shows are archived on the Compassionate Friends website as well as the Voice America website. I'm happy to tell you that you can also receive CDs of selected shows, and that you can look for those CDs at the Compassionate Friends or on my website, healingthegrievingheart.org. You can also call a toll-free number, 866-964-4000, to order your CDs. Well, today our topic is when a sibling is murdered, and on this show we'll have Ben Seif. Ben is an artist, musician, and co-director of the Centering Corporation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing education and resources for the bereaved. On this show, we'll discuss with Ben how his brother Tim was murdered in 1986. Ben was a teenager, a 16-year-old at the time that his brother was murdered, and he'll give us some insights into how that has impacted his life. And joining us later will be Lou Cox, who is founder of the Violent Crime Victim Services located in Tacoma, Washington. Lou's also a bereaved parent and a victim advocate. Ben, welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart. So happy to have you on today.
Thank you.
So, Ben, could you tell us a little bit about your life, and it's been how many years since your brother was murdered?
Oh, what's it been now? 19 years now?
Uh-huh. And, yeah, could you tell us a little bit about him and about the circumstances?
Yeah, I just, I was 16 at the time. He was 19, he was almost 20. He was murdered in an unprovoked attack. They called it an altercation, which means a fight, but he was actually in a parking lot when a with a group of friends when a about four young men came up in a car and kind of started a fight with my brother and some of his friends, and one of the kids ended up hitting my brother in the head with a jack stand and gave him a brain hemorrhage, which killed him almost instantly.
So he was dead when he arrived at the hospital?
Yeah, he was dead at the scene, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And how old was he?
He was 19. He was almost 20.
So he was your big brother?
Yeah, my only big brother, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So could you tell us a little bit about your 16 at the time, how that impacted you as a 16-year-old? You know, it's going back to remember, but...
Yeah, no, actually, it's sometimes very fresh. Just being 16 is a tough time in itself, and when that happened, that really turned my world upside down. You know, I really felt like I lost a lot of foundation, a lot of stability in my life. My brother was somebody that kind of looked out for me, and I lost that in that moment.
So now, were your parents together?
Yeah, they were at the time.
So you had your parents were together. Did you have other siblings?
Yeah, there's a total of 10 of us. So.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I didn't realize that. Where did you fit in the scene? Where did he fit in the group?
Well, he was number one, and I'm number two.
Oh, my.
So now I'm the oldest brother. And there's, you know, what, eight under me now, but I can't remember how many there were at that time. in 86, there must have been probably five or six of us.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. So you had quite the family, and you became the oldest. Yeah.
Yes.
How was that to suddenly be the oldest?
That hasn't stopped. That's something that, you know, I guess part of me still, I don't know if resent is the right word, but that's a difficult position to be in a family, and something that I wish I still had an older brother or sibling that I could talk to. I mean, it's something that I continue to miss, but you know, I do what I can. I try to be responsible and take care of everything I can.
Sounds like he was a neat brother.
Yeah, he was a wild brother, that's for sure.
Now you're a musician,
mm-hmm.
and an artist. Were you then at that time? I assume you were.
Yeah, definitely.
So you're a pretty sensitive guy.
I don't know. I can be insensitive, too.
I think of musicians, though, as really kind of an artist, is kind of really taking in the scene.
I'm pretty expressive, I guess, would probably be the best way to say
yeah.
it. You know?
So I was thinking, how did that impact you at his death, being that in that kind of genre and feeling? Did you play music? Did you
mm-hmm.
do art? What did you do?
I tell you, I did a lot of both, and that was when my brother was alive, we actually played a couple of different shows together, a talent show in particular for my high school, and those are great memories. But just being a musician, when he died, I kind of tried to fill his shoes or keep some of his music alive, too. And so it was 1987, the year after we did our first full-length recording. It was a tape then. I always want to say CD, but...
Mm-hmm.
We did a 10-song CD that our band was called Nightmare, and it was a dedication to Tim. And it was it was probably about 60-70% songs about that situation or that that experience. Some of the the heaviness about it. It was
mm-hmm.
definitely a metal band. You know, it was very very intense.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact that you said great memories, because one of the things, particularly if we have any teens listening to the show, that I want to say is, you're not going to forget, are you?
Mm-mm. Well, there's no way.
That's one of the big fears that we have early on, is how do we keep their memories alive? But honestly, it seems that as you get further out, the memories even become stronger and sweeter, the special ones, do you think?
They do. One thing that I try to remind myself is to remember all the things, and the good and the bad. And just to try and remember, I think it does an injustice to him to remember only the sweet things about him and kind of
mm-hmm.
make him into this angel. He was in no way he was an angel. But I remember the good things. I remember the tough times too. And I just think that that's important to remember exactly who he was.
Absolutely. You know, some of the tough times are some of the most amusing too. And some of the
mm-hmm.
mistakes people have made and the dumb things they did. And, you know, that's
absolutely.
All part of who they were. Makes them real. Like you say, we don't want just angels flying around. We want the real guy there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things that I want to talk to you a little bit is, I'm wondering if you cope with drug and alcohol at all, because one of the three things that we talk to teens about when I'm working with 9/11 families is about being careful and not taking risks, doing sex, drugs, and alcohol are
mm-hmm.
three of the ways that kids can sometimes tend to cope and get off track.
Well, I see that as two questions, really. One is the drug and alcohol thing. The other is taking risks.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, the drug and alcohol thing wasn't really a factor for me. My brother was a substance abuser. He had a lot of different addictions and that. And growing up with him, I would sometimes be his caretaker and try to keep him awake at night or keep him on his side to keep him from vomiting on himself and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when that really, drugs and alcohol was never really an issue for me. However, on the other end of it, risky behaviors. Once he died, I was very. I did a lot of things that probably aren't safe, that wouldn't be considered safe. Walking into areas of I remember being in New York when I was 18 and just being fearless and careless about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Not really having any particular desire to protect myself or be safe, and I don't know if I felt like I was invulnerable or if I just didn't really care, and I think part of it was is that, you know, that loss is intense enough that you kind of wish sometimes that it had been you and not somebody
mm-hmm.
else.
Or at least that you could join them, not that you'd want to kill yourself, but just that you want to get out of the pain and might want to be with them. Or why wasn't it me or whatever, why wasn't I with them?
Tough stuff for sure.
Yeah. Did you think at all about whether or not you could have saved him or if you'd been there, or did those kinds of thoughts come up for you?
No, not so much. For me, it was more about that particular night that he died. I had these are hard things to talk about. I had a particular, being 16, I don't know what the best way to say this is, but I had some very intense things going on in my life being 16,
mm-hmm.
And needing that particular night to call my brother. And I remember thinking about calling him that night, and I had no way to get a hold of him. He was living in a different city. And so I never did talk to him that particular night. And then that morning, of course, the cop comes to the house and tells me what happened. That was very difficult to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but no, I don't think that I could have, if I had been there, I would have been able to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. You know. Well, fast forward to today. I know that I had talked to you this summer and that you were getting ready to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. This actually goes back about probably 3 years, give or take. You know, I'm not sure exactly the times, but about 3 years ago, I had been contacted. Well, I should say this. I was snooping around on the internet. You know, sometimes I do this pretty regularly. I'll type in my name, or I'll type in my brother's name, or just kind of see if there's any articles and things like that I haven't read. And I came across a website called Truth and Justice, and this particular website believes that the only guy that's still in prison now for my brother's murder didn't commit murder. He was uninvolved he didn't actually swing and kill my brother. He was an instigator and he was a ringleader.
Mm-hmm.
So he believes that that this guy wasn't guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And so
let's take a break right now. When we come back, we'll talk about that Truth and Justice on the internet that you found. We're coming up on break, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. Please stay tuned to hear more from Ben Seif, artist, musician, and co-director of the Centering Corporation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing education and resources for the bereaved. Ben and I have been discussing the murder of his brother Tim in 1986. Joining us after break will be Luke Hawks, founder of the Violent Crime Victim Services located in Tacoma, Washington. Lou is a bereaved parent and a victim advocate and a certified trauma specialist. You can purchase CDs of shows of the Healing the Grieving Heart through thecompassionatefriends.org or by calling the toll-free number 877-969-0010. You can also visit me on my email at gchorsley@aol.com or go on my website at healingthegrievingheart.org.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Every Monday from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific Time, tune in to hear Healing with Pat Honeyotis. Pat will interview authors and experts in the field of alternative and traditional medicine and discuss current issues. Accurate information will be provided, beliefs and practices will be shared, and listener questions will be answered. This show is about helping educate listeners to become empowered so that they can make informed choices regarding their physical, spiritual, and emotional health. So tune in to hear Healing with Pat Honeyotis and learn more about your healthcare options. Only on the world's elite health station, your life, your health, your network, Voice America Health and Wellness.
We all want to improve the environment, but not all of us are willing to make radical changes in our lifestyle to help. If you're one of the millions of people who want to change the world without changing your life, tune in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time for The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman. The Lazy Environmentalist is about easily and effortlessly greening our modern lifestyles without ever sacrificing style. Host Josh Dorfman will bring together designers, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who are rapidly making the modern green lifestyle a reality. So help your world and help yourself by listening to The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and my guest today is Ben Seif, artist, musician, and co-director of the Centering Corporation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing education and resources for the bereaved. We've been discussing the murder of his brother Tim in 1986, and joining us on this show now will also be Lou Cox, who is founder of the Violent Crime Victim Services located in Tacoma, Washington. Lou is a bereaved parent, victims advocate, and certified trauma specialist. He's also the co-author with Dr. Bob Bauer of Coping with Traumatic Grief, Homicide. Well, welcome to our show, Lou.
Well, thank you for having me on, Gloria.
It's great to have you on. I wanted to fill you in on where we are right now. You've met Ben before, right,
and talked
to him?
I have.
I think when you talked to Ben, he was just getting ready to do some court work about his going to court, and we were just going to get into that. Right now, he's talking to us about a site on the web called Truth and Justice, where he went to that site and found out that they had made some comments about his brother's murder. Right,
mm-hmm.
Ben?
Yeah, and it's I guess I should probably shorten that. It just, I had sent an email to this guy that who ran the site and just said that, you know, I believe that he was, I appreciate his opinions and that, but I believe that his facts are incorrect, and that it is still his contention that the guy isn't guilty, but, you know, that's fine and everything. But what he did was he contacted his name's Jeff Ragland's brother, Jeff Ragland's in prison, his brother, and his brother contacted me looking for support for his release.
Oh, for your brother's murderer's release.
Right.
Okay.
Which, you know, at this point, you know, at least it's been this long, that didn't bother me so much, that I would expect that he would want to get his brother out. That doesn't bother me. What does bother me is that I think he was trying to manipulate me, but
mm-hmm.
At any rate, what happened was Jeff Ragland was asking for a commutation of his sentence, whether I would support it or not. As soon as his brother figured that I wasn't going to support it, he pretty much dropped the lines. I was told at that time, though, that the commutation request wouldn't be looked at for 10 years. Since then, in the state of Iowa, they have changed the laws so that you can only request a commutation. I think it's every 5 years or something like that, and before it was every year. So anyway, they had ended up looking at it this year, way sooner than I was ready to really consider it.
And I know you were. I had gone to something that Lou put on, and you were looking for somebody to be a victim advocate to go with you to court.
Yes.
Did you find someone?
Well, no, actually, in the state of Iowa, they have a group of people that's what they do.
Oh, great.
And I was contacted by this woman that just told me what was, you know, what to expect, offered just to be able to sit there with me so that I didn't feel like I was, being teamed up against, in that situation, told me what, you know, what things I could do, whether I wanted Jeff Ragland to hear my comments or if I wanted him to, not be able to see me, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was neat.
Yeah. So this sounds familiar to you, right, Lou?
Oh, yes. This is what we do all the time for families.
Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about what you do? And
well, we are a victim advocate. We're community-based in Tacoma, Washington. And we service what county we reside in is Pierce County. And it's a county of about 700,000 to 800,000 people. And unfortunately, Tacoma is statistically they're the third most violent city on the West Coast per capita, besides Los Angeles and Oakland, California. So we have a lot of homicide incidents. So we're in court a lot. So we provide court support for families during the hearings, arraignments, and through trials. And we have a fair amount of capital cases here, which you know, take perhaps 3 to 3.5 years to get to trial. So there's a lot of pretrial hearings, and so we go with those families to those pretrial hearings to help prepare them for the long trial.
Now, do you hang in with them at all over time?
Yes.
Because I'm wondering, Ben, how would that be for you to have somebody hanging? Are these people that you're in touch with? Are they available if you need to talk to them?
Well, I've got her number. Her name is Sarah McMillan.
Uh-huh.
And I can, you know, I can call her if I have any other questions or you know, as he continues to look for a release, you know, I'll probably be in touch with her again. So.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you see, Lou, as the most difficult things for people like Ben being in these situations?
Well, first of all, when something like this happens, a family member is murdered, they're completely stunned. And most people don't have, involvement with the criminal justice system other than maybe a district court, parking ticket, speeding ticket, or something like that. But the criminal justice system, in and of itself, is an industry that moves on its own time and wheels. And it can and take a family and just literally chew them up and spit them out, for lack of a better term. And it's very devastating to them. So what we do is we help them navigate that system, and we have what we a part of our services, a crisis intervention. So sometimes within days after a family member has been murdered, we come in and meet with the family and give them a rundown of our services, what we will offer them. And our services are free because we're a nonprofit organization. And give them the information on the criminal investigation, the courts, how they work, what are the possibilities of here, is this a death penalty case, is this first degree, second degree murder. You know, we give them all that information that they're hungry for, but really don't have the contact with the system to be able to get all their questions answered. So we will help prepare them.
And so, Ben, how does that feel for you to hear him say what? I assume you did not have that kind of support, or you did.
Now or back? You're talking
back
about
then.
The trial and everything?
Back then, yeah.
You want me to be honest? I don't remember much about those years at all. I, in many ways, intentionally turned off, you know, whatever was going on. It was too much to handle, mm-hmm. and so I just chose not to get involved. I don't think those services were available to my parents, you know, I know there's victim assistance and that kind of thing, but not advocacy. And so it's a totally new thing. It felt so good to go in there and have somebody that just felt like, you know, was holding my hand and showing me how it's going to work. So.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that maybe you wouldn't have turned off it quite so much if you would have had a support, to do it as a family.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Yeah, so Lou, do you see yourself bringing in the family? And Ben at the time was 16. What do you think the challenges are for the kids and the family?
Well, at 16, is teenagers have the most difficult challenges when something like this happens in their family. They're just breaking loose and developing their own identity at 16. And to go to a support group or go to counseling, it's not a peer thing to do because, you might get a reputation that you have to go to a shrink and, and so you won't do that. And a teenager doesn't have the maturity to process something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, they try to compartmentalize it, ignore it as much as possible, and go on with their daily life as
teenager. I would think, Ben, for you, I mean, it's hard. How many years was it before the trial took place and all that?
Well, that happened pretty quickly. I do remember at least pieces of it. I've seen some videotape of news footage later, but that really wasn't, for me, that wasn't the focus, the trial and all that. The focus for me was that my brother's gone.
Right,
Nothing that the trial was going to do was going to change that. And
but also trying to be a normal teenager, right?
Oh, I was definitely not normal.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, one thing that happened is I ended up fighting with my dad quite a bit, more than usual, I should say, and ended up going into the hospital. And I got, I can't say I got a lot of services in the hospital then.
Are you talking about mental or physical?
Well, emotional stuff was...
Emotional stuff.
You
you ended up in the hospital.
Well, I had emotional stuff going on, but it was basically not getting along at home. And being sent to the hospital was kind of a form of punishment, is kind of how it felt.
Uh-huh.
And so when I went to the hospital, what was different then, I may be tangenting here, but what was different then is that they didn't have... services just for teens or just for children. It was all lumped together. I was with adults. I was with rapists. I was with people with schizophrenia and all kinds of different eating disorders. So we were all in one floor of a hospital.
Oh,
and
yes.
So it was pretty terrifying.
Oh, I can imagine.
You know, so I know now, you know, what I do, you know, with work and everything, I know now that that's changed a lot, and they have a lot of services available that weren't then. So I can't really say personally whether I, you know, have any experience with that, but I'm sure that it's different.
You know, it's interesting because sometimes normal grief, and I think, Lou, you probably recognize this too, with teenagers can look pretty scary, and it can be normal, but we have to stop them from doing anything that is harm of themselves or others. But some of the emotional stuff is normal, wouldn't you say, Lou, or what would you think about it?
Well, they are. They're normal behaviors under the traumatic circumstances, but outside that, people would look at it as abnormal behavior.
Right.
And there's a lot of behavior, especially with teenagers, that's going to come out laterally. And so if they're not attended to and nurtured in a proper way, and somebody understanding that they're experiencing a traumatic event, then eventually they can get themselves into a lot of trouble physically, emotionally.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
So, Ben, what happened? How did you snap out of it or get out of it or move out of it? Process, or did you have any defining moments?
Well, I can tell you that it took about 10 years before I could openly talk about it. At the same time, I was very much expressing myself through music and writing, songs and things like that. And so I was, if you saw a picture of me then, you could definitely see that I was going through it. It was very dark times for me. I didn't openly talk about it, but I was expressing myself very fiercely. You know, I was just a huge ball of fire, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't do drugs or alcohol.
Well, you know, I drank just like anybody else would. But
I mean, you didn't go over the...
No, it wasn't related to that.
Yeah.
No, but it took 10 years to really work through it, and that's an awful lot of work to get through something like that and feel like all of a sudden, I think at that 10-year point for me, it might have been 9 years or so, I felt like this weight was lifted off my shoulders, and it was a very physical feeling that happened, and I don't think I could have forced it to happen. I just think I needed to keep working like I was doing.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say to those teens out there?
Just to hang in there and keep doing what you've got to do to be healthy and to allow yourself to do it and not to listen to other people's, you know, even though I'm telling somebody this right now, not to listen to other people's expectations of what it is that they need to be doing as far as getting over something. And I think it's very insulting when somebody tells you need to get over it.
Right.
You know, and so.
You know, there's an old adage here, Gloria and Ben,
uh-huh.
is that you in traumatic grief, you deal with it now or you deal with it later.
Yeah.
in uncomfortable.
That's a good point. Can we bring that point up, deal with it now or deal with it later as soon as we come back from break?
Sure.
And we're coming up on break, and please stay tuned with us for more from Ben Seif, artist, musician, and co-director of the Centering Corporation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing education and resources for the bereaved. And we've been discussing the murder of Ben's brother Tim in 1986, and joining us on this show is Lou Cox, founder of the Violent Crime Victim Services, located in Tacoma, Washington. Lou's a bereaved parent, victim's advocate, and certified trauma specialist. He is also a co-author with Bob Bauer of Coping with Traumatic Grief, Homicide. Again, I want to remind you that you can purchase selected CDs of Healing the Grieving Heart through the CompassionateFriends.org or by calling a toll-free number, 877-969-0010. For a limited time, you can purchase a set of 10 CDs valued at $60 for an introductory price of $45. You can also email me at gchorsley or visit my website at healingthegrievingheart.org.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough.
Did you know your child's asthma attacks can be triggered by things like shower curtains, a blanket, even a teddy bear?
I feel like I'm choking.
And there are many other things in your home and your child's classroom you may not know about. For the latest information, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Help prevent your child's asthma attacks and avoid the emergency room. Call toll-free 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Or visit www.noattacks.org.
I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
When you combine energy secrets from ancient China and the latest breakthroughs in medicinal science, you get Power Healing with Dr. Shah. Heard every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. Each week, Dr. Shah will bring you another step closer to the expanding world of body space medicine. You will quickly learn and appreciate how power healing is a perfect alternative to hospitals and expensive drugs. Take a step beyond modern medicine every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time with Dr. Shah on Power Healing, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and my guest today is Ben Seif, artist, musician, and co-director of the Centering Corporation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing education and resources for bereaved. We've been discussing the murder of Ben's brother, Tim, in 1986. Joining us on this show is Lou Cox, founder of the Violent Crime Victim Services, located in Tacoma, Washington. Lou is a bereaved parent, victim's advocate, and certified trauma service specialist. He's also a co-author of Coping with Traumatic Grief, Homicide. Lou, before we get talking about Tim's death and about victim services, could you tell us how to get your book?
Oh, well, yes. You can go to Violent Crime Victim Services website, which would be vcvs.org. That would be Victor Charlie Victor Sam.org. And on the front page of the website, there's a copy of the front page of our book. You can click on there, and it'll give you the information how to order that book.
Great.
So,
and
so again, that is vcvs.org.
Okay, and you can also email me at gchorsley@aol.com, and I can give you that information. So when we were going to break, you were making a comment about you either grieve now or later, I think, Lou. Is that it?
Yes. In the experience that I've had working with hundreds of families over the last 15 years of homicide survivors is that those who will dive into it and deal with it, you know, immediately. We have a support group that meets once a month exclusively for survivors of homicide victims. And there are some people that can't wait to get into the support group and start dealing with it. And there's others, it's a constant challenge for them to come. It's so painful that it's just difficult for them to deal with it. If they don't deal with it, either as whether a teenager or an adult, it will catch up with you. And when it catches up you months or years later, it's going to have, you're going to have more adverse effects than if you start dealing with it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Now teenagers, rarely do I ever see them deal with it right away. Typically, they deal with it like Ben had.
Mm-hmm. And kind of more acting it out. Well, one of the things, you know, teens have got hormones driving them also. There's a lot going on with teens, you know, anyway. And developmentally, that sometimes I think, would you say, Ben, that you had to ignore some of this stuff just to live and do your life?
Well, it's more, when it's hard to explain, really. It's not so much that we're not, that I wasn't dealing with it. I can just speak for myself here. It wasn't that I wasn't dealing with it. It was that I was choosing how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was,
that's a great way to put it, that you were choosing how to deal with it, yeah.
Well, they told me in the hospital that I was in denial, and I didn't believe that was true because I thought it was. I did believe that it was disrespectful to so quickly forget about my brother,
mm-hmm.
and to say that he was dead for me, just to actually verbally say it, was too much. It was too disrespectful, so I didn't. I wouldn't say that. So if you had asked me to tell you that, I couldn't do it, or I wouldn't do it. Is probably the better way to say it. But it didn't mean that I wasn't working through those things. I was painting. I was talking about it. In fact, I was talking about it quite a lot. But what often the teen, you know, certainly me, talking to adults or talking to our parents wasn't necessarily the choice that we'd make. In fact, a lot of people that I know that were teens that have gone through this, their parents would be the last people that they would want to share their grief with or share their experiences or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was. I think that the children, in not just teens, but children in particular, bereaved children, feel like that they can't really compete with their parents' loss,
mm-hmm.
and so they just don't even go there. Because if I talk to my dad about it, he's going to start crying. He's going to be, it's all about him all of a sudden.
Right,
and
exactly.
So,
the
you know,
forgotten mourner thing they often call
yeah.
kids. Yeah.
And I think that's fine. I think that's natural, and I think that's how it is. But I think it just needs to be said and understood so that when you're talking about a teen, they've got to find an outlet somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about destructive behaviors, and you talk about things that they do that are unhealthy, those often are teens who don't find an outlet, whether it's through creating things like music or art, or if it's just talking to friends. If they've got nobody to talk to and they shut down completely, those are dangerous things. So just because they're not talking to an adult or a parent doesn't mean that they're not talking about it. And there's a lot more avenues available for teens today than there were back then.
Right. And what are some of the avenues that you do, Lou, with teens if they won't talk and they don't come to meetings? What do you suggest to parents or teens?
Well, And Ben is right, is that siblings know that the loss is a different slant with the parents than it is with them. And so consequently, and my own children did that to me.
Let's say, Lou, I think your daughter was murdered,
yes.
Right?
Yes, in 1987.
Uh-huh.
And my other daughters would not bring it up, would not allow me to bring it up. If I did, they would get real thick because what they thought is they wanted to protect me. And they wanted me not to break down.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as they could avoid talking about that, then they wouldn't see dad or mom break down. But that is actually, it's just the opposite. We want to talk about it. We want to talk to them about it. And we are okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay for all of us to break down. And this is what we try to tell folks when we do crisis intervention with them, to be aware of the family dynamics in this particular area.
Ben
is right, is that even though they're not talking to their parents, which is hard, difficult to do for the reasons I just mentioned, is that they are talking. They're talking to perhaps other siblings that they have or friends, but they
mm-hmm.
are talking.
Hopefully they are, but as Ben says, they better be, that hopefully they can find somebody
to talk about it. Well, one thing that's really changed, I think, in schools right now, is I'm seeing a lot of it. Back in 1986, our school counselor was a guidance counselor, there to help us find colleges, there to, you know, help us deal with, you know, I don't even know if, you know, I'm not sure exactly what else they offer. But they weren't there in order for, you know, if I went in there, I was having a bad day, and I said, you know, really, this is just a heavy day for me. I need to just sit down and talk. That wasn't available to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the training that school counselors are given now is often real counseling, and it's available for teens now. And I think teens can go into the counseling office and sit down and talk about what's going on.
Yeah, and some of them even have groups if they're interested
mm-hmm.
in it. So,
they do.
So they've
come a long ways.
Yeah, there are a lot of things going on right now. I know when my son was killed, my daughter put Walkman on her head and said, you know, at times and said, time out, basically. But I know from working with the 9/11 families, one of the things that we find is that teens can talk about it. They can hear their siblings' name mentioned, but not for long periods.
Yeah.
Keep it short.
Yeah.
You know, and they are grieving, and they don't want people knocking on their door trying to come in or, you know, trying to make them grieve. People grieve on their own time.
Yeah.
Before Lee, when we go on break, we're going to lose Lee. Lou's going to leave us. And before that happens, Lou, I wanted to ask you how people can get in touch with a victim advocate. I know I had someone from the Midwest who I put in touch with another victim's advocate. But how would you suggest people do it if they're from Ohio or Minnesota or something?
That's a good question, and I'm glad you asked me, because people can call the National Center for Victims of Crime in Washington, D.C., and I have that number, which is 1-800-211-7996. And there is no list that is available in the community for those typical support groups. And what you can find them is through the National Center on Crime in D.C. They can put you in touch with the groups that they are aware of in different cities. You can call the prosecutor's office or the district attorney's office of that city, and they will know if there's any advocate groups for victims of violence. Crime.
Great. Lou, thanks a lot for being on the show, and you can also email me at gchorsley@aol.com, and I can get in touch with Lou if you are in need of an advocate or information on that. And thanks a lot for being on the show, Lou.
Thanks
Lou.
For having me. Bye.
Bye-bye. Please stay tuned for more comments and advice from our guest, Ben Seif, artist, musician, and co-director of the Centering Corporation. If you would like to email me about this or upcoming shows, my email is gchorsley@aol.com, and my website is healingthegrievingheart.org. Ben, when we come back, I'd like to know if there's anything that you'd like to talk about, any areas that you feel like we've missed discussing. And I would also like to talk to you a little bit about the Centering Corporation and the wonderful work that you people do there.
Okay.
I wanted to remind people that they can get my CDs through my website, healingthegrievingheart.org, or they can go to Compassionate Friends website and order mm-hmm. them. And right now they're $45, a value of $60, and we're giving a special introductory offer.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time for Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. My guest today is Ben Seif, artist, musician, and co-director of the Centering Corporation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing education and resources for the bereaved. We've been discussing the murder of Ben's brother, Tim, in 1986. Well, Ben, before we went to break, I was asking you, are there any particular points that you feel like we've missed?
No, I think we're doing fine. I think it's an important subject, and there's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
It's great to have you on the show, and I love the fact that you're talking about being a teen, because it's not a lot of people who lost siblings as teens have a little bit of trouble even now. So it's wonderful to hear you out there talking about it. Could you talk a little bit about the Centering Corporation that you're involved with, your co-director?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am. Well, I started after Tim died. I met Marvin Joy Johnson, who founded the Centering Corporation, and I started doing little illustrations for their newsletters. They had a couple little vignettes that I illustrated for them, and kind of got me going that way. And I did that for a couple of years until I was 18, where I moved down to Omaha and started working full-time with them. It's been an interesting run of things. I mean, Centering Corporation is a nonprofit company, and we're basically in education. Even though we're a publishing company, we try to teach people about grief and healthy ways of dealing with it. And so it's been a really good vehicle for me to help advocate teen loss or teen grief booklets and resources that you can use, things that weren't very available back then. So it's been
that's
a nice...
great. And now you've launched a journal, Grief Digest.
Grief Digest is a new magazine that we came up with last year, and that's actually my wife Janet's publication that she came up with, and she's working with Andrea Gamble, who's our editor. And that's been just a really nice collection of different kinds of stories from, for everybody, for brave people, for professionals, for educators. Just we're kind of using a shotgun approach with that, just trying to get as much information available out there.
Well, one of the really neat things that I saw when I went to the website for the Centering Corporation, and how do we get to that website? What is it? Centering Corporation.
Yeah, it's www.centering.org, and that's CENTERING.org.
But one of the really neat things when I went to the site is the fact that if you want to put an article in the magazine, they actually show you, tell you about the length, and they're happy to have you submit them, which is really unusual.
Yeah, it's not a closed, you know, we get submissions from all over the country and in some cases other countries as well. It's very, very open to people's input and ideas and anybody that has a unique, you know, vision. Is more than welcome to write in and try to use it as a voice.
Yeah, I think it's really neat to be that open with it. It's, as an author, I know sometimes it's hard to get your ideas out there and find people that are interested in even considering publication of them. So that's a wonderful thing that you're doing that. Well, you've had 19 years now to think about it, and what would you recommend to others who have sibling murdered?
Well, there's so many things that I would say now. If I go back to being 16 again, I would just try to be open to what it is they're going through and think of it as an experience and to really cherish and savor all of it, even the bad tastes, all the things that are there and really submerge themselves in it and to explore it and learn from it. That's what I would do now, knowing that I was kind of running away from it as much as I could back then.
So you'd really try to be more involved in it if you could as a teen.
Yeah, but that doesn't. I'm not saying how to. I'm not saying that have to go to a counselor and that kind of thing. But I am definitely saying, know what it is that they're going through, and not just through grief, but through other things that they're experiencing. Just being, those ages in particular.
Now, the Compassionate Friends organization, which is the largest self-help organization in the world, is offering sibling support now, where they didn't in the past. But in the past few years, they've got some wonderful sibling groups
and
things going on online and the national conference, which will be in July. There'll be siblings there. And I've been very impressed with those kids at the conferences.
Yeah, they're a great group. They really are. I've had a chance to work with them as well, and that's been a really rewarding experience.
Yeah, what kinds of things have you done with them there?
Well, I've done workshops. Three years ago, I was a sibling chair for the national conference and trying to come up with different kinds of activities. And a man named Danny Yaffe had really helped out in showing me or in doing a lot of the work too, but showing me what was needed for those groups and to try and entertain them as well. As that's the big difference is for like for parents to go into a support group, it's not so much about entertaining as it is about going in and working through the loss. But for teens, it's and for the children as well, you've got to give them something to chew on, and then they something to work through, and then give them something that's fun to do. It's not all about darkness and devastation and all that stuff. So.
Absolutely, it's so much fun to see those kids all having fun together and having permission from each other to be able to have fun again.
Yeah, you know what? When I was 16, that happened. I felt completely isolated. And even my best friends, I couldn't really talk to about it. I would repeat things over and over again, and they would ask me to stop. It was uncomfortable for everybody, and I think that's the neat thing about support groups is you're around people that at least have some kind of idea what it is you're going through. They don't, of course, know exactly what it is, but you don't feel like you're in this this wasteland of no one's around there to be supportive. It's a totally different feeling to know that there's other people out there that have gone through difficult things, too.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is neat, too, is people have gone through it at different stages. So you might be bereaved maybe 6 months or something, and you might be with somebody where it's been 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you see the different stages, and they can also empathize with where you are.
Well, you know what? One piece of advice that I would say to a bereaved teen right now is to not be judgmental. And not to let people be judgmental to you either. And that's, and what I'm talking about is the grief stuff, is don't tell people how it should be or what it is that they should be going through or how long it should take. And don't do that to yourself, I guess would be the more important part of it. Is don't tell yourself that you've got to be doing anything in particular, you know, that you shouldn't tell yourself that it's been a year and that you should be over it by now. If you feel like you're over it, then you probably are. If you don't feel like you're over it, then you've still got a lot of work to do.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, we all got caught in those Kubler-Ross stages, anger, denial, depression, acceptance. But what people don't realize is that she was talking about people who were terminally ill in the hospital. It's really a different model, and we're starting to realize that now.
It's part of it. And, yeah, she. I don't think that's what her intent was on it. I think she's talking about those being pieces of a much bigger thing. I think people just use that out of context.
Because it's easy. Well, it's time to close our show now, and I want to thank my guest, Ben Seif. Ben, it's just been fabulous having you on the show. You're an adorable person, and I just really cherish my friendship with you.
Thank you, Gloria. I got one thing I wanted to tell you about that I forgot to tell you about is that we've got a website that's up that's called fireinmyheart.com.
Oh.
It's www.fireinmyheart.com. It's specifically for bereaved teens.
Oh.
There's different kinds of things they can do on that. Just to look into that if they'd like.
Okay, fireinmyheart.com. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Gloria.
Please stay tuned again next week when our topic will be Where Does Sadness End and Depression Begin After the Death of a Child with Dr. Robert R. Thompson, who wrote the book Remembering the Death of a Child, which won a National Book Award in 2003. You can purchase selected CDs of Healing the Grieving Heart through the CompassionateFriends.org or by calling the toll-free number 877-969-0010. For a limited time, you can purchase a set for a value of $60 for only $45. And you can also email me at my website at healingthegrievingheart.org. These shows are archived on health.voiceamerica as well as the Compassionate Friends websites. This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Please stay tuned again next Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard Time, 12 Eastern, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal and support. Remember, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley.
Thank you for joining us today on Healing the Grieving Heart. Join us again next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.